Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and this time we're covering JLU Season 3, Episode 9, Grudge Match. This episode is a sequel of sorts to the Season 2 premiere, The Cat and the Canary, with the side of Double Date, the episode from last season as well. We are joined by a first-time guest who is a friend and Patreon supporter of the network and has appeared on several other Fire and Water shows. That includes an episode of Justice Society Presents, where we both joined in on the discussion of James Robinson and Paul Smith's The Golden Age miniseries. Please welcome to the Watchtower our friend Noah Tarnow. Welcome, Noah.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to talk to both of you.
Awesome.
We're glad to have you. And, of course, we have to ask the obligatory questions that we have. You know, we have to get your bona fides as like you don't have them, we know. But we have to know your history with the DCAU. So how did you first encounter the DCAU?
So I was a Batman nut in high school, like so many of us around this age. And unfortunately, though, I spent most of my high school years living in Canada. And at least where I lived, we didn't get Fox at the time. So when Batman the Animated Series premiered, I couldn't see it. And I heard about it. And I was jealous that I couldn't see it. And I remember we visited my grandparents in Florida. And I basically stayed up all night because, like, the Cartoon Network or I guess Fox had a marathon. So like literally I was up till 2 in the morning watching it because I'm, when am I going to get to see this again? It's never going to happen. I have to see every episode. I have to see what they do with Poison Ivy. And then of course I came back to the States for college and you're in college. So you don't watch a lot of cartoons, or at least I didn't. And then, you know, after college, I came back to, I was still in the States and I would get it on DVD. And then by the time Justice League came out, I was really excited. I mean, it was my late 20s, so it was Saturday nights. I couldn't watch it that much because I sort of had a life. But I do remember, sort of, less more than I do now. But I sort of remember when it premiered, like being excited. Like, I'm not going out tonight. I'm watching. I'm getting a good dinner. I'm sitting down. I'm savoring this. I'm taping it on my VCR because it was the waning days of VCRs. Mm-hmm. And I tried to watch the show as much as I could. And by the time this episode happened, you know, I was definitely trying to watch it more because I think it knew it was on its last legs, and like everyone else, I like JLU better than just JL or like a lot of people. So I definitely watched this episode when it first premiered. And another important trivia factoid about me and the DCAU is in my brief magazine writing career, I reviewed the pilot episode of Batman Beyond for Rolling Stone magazine.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, how about that?
Nice.
I think I gave it, well, I don't know if we had stars, but I definitely gave it a positive review.
That's
awesome. And I remember
awesome.
The editor didn't understand it because she didn't know that Batman, she's like, where's Robin? I'm like, well, there is no Robin. And like, she hadn't seen any of the Burton Schumacher movies. So like, I had to explain that to her in 1998 or something.
Wow. She didn't. Yeah. Wow. And she was an editor at Rolling Stone and didn't.
You know, takes all kinds.
I guess.
But this is the perfect episode for me to review because this is an episode about female characters. And there's really no one more qualified to talk about, you know, women and women's issues than a 49-year-old man. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I'm so on that board train there.
Well, the truth is, when this episode, I was trying to think, you know, I wanted you to, you know, we had talked about you being on an episode, and in full disclosure, guys, I had promised Noah a different episode. The previous episode, and totally spaced on it after I promised it to somebody else. And Noah was nice enough.
Very gracious.
Very gracious and nice enough to not hate me, not to just like go out on, you know, social media and say, this Chris Franklin is a hack.
Right.
He sucks. So
I got a lot better reasons to hate a lot more people than hating you for that.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got to be selective about these things nowadays, right?
You gotta parcel out your hate more carefully than that.
Right. But we do appreciate it. So, but you know, at one point I'm like, you know, We honestly don't. I mean, we might have female listeners, but we don't have a lot of feedback from other female in our comments and stuff. So there wasn't anybody that like sprung to mind that was like, oh, okay, you know, I mean, we just, you know, we just don't. We don't have a lot. And, you know, so you are completely, you know, qualified to
honorary female in this case.
You're an honorary female.
I've been called that before.
Okay. Well, while we're talking about the DCAU, so do you have a favorite? Is it Batman Beyond? Is it Justice League? What's your favorite series?
It's Justice League for sure. I mean, even now when I watch BTAS, you know, I like it, but I like how Tim kind of, you know, developed the animation style over the run of the DCAU. So I think it kind of ended a lot sharper and a lot more eye-catching from my view than it started. You know, I'd rather look at an episode of Justice League than an episode of BTAS, as much as I love BTAS. So yeah, it's Justice League all the way. Justice League / JLU.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So who is your favorite leaguer on the series?
Yeah, it's actually the Flash. This is my favorite version of the Flash anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I really like that they made the choice to make him the wacky character, you know, far more than he's ever, than at least I remember him ever being in the comics. Although I liked the Rogues when I was a kid, and then I read kind of a lot of the Wade run. But I really like the nuance they give this Wally West. I'd like to imagine it from Batman's point of view. Like, why does Batman put up with this idiot? And I imagine him thinking something like, well, this guy's a complete clown, but he's very powerful. He's very brave. He believes in the right things. Like, he never hesitates to run into danger to help innocent people. And I like picturing that kind of calculus in Batman's head. And I think it gives the character some really interesting nuance. And some of my favorite moments in the whole series, like when they reveal their secret identities to each other, and, you know, Batman knows that he's Wally West and he's like shocked by that.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be my favorite moment in the whole series. This is my favorite Flash top to bottom, any medium. And God, what I wouldn't give for a DCAU Flash series. I mean, 1,000 times over, I would have taken that over the live action series. That's for sure. Or the movies.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Michael Rosenbaum, I'm sure he'd be willing to do it. So come on, you know, we got that Green Lantern series. It was great, but it was disconnected.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't have John. It, you know, it was centered on Hal. And so, I mean,
it's not too late. You're right. We could do it.
We could do it. I mean, Michael Rosenbaum's obviously still very active, and he's been wanting to do something Smallville, like a Smallville animated thing, but let's do a Flash thing, you know. So yeah, I'm so glad we're doing an episode that's got so much Flash in it then for you, you know.
You know, it's I got other characters I like, right? You know, I mean, that's the great thing about JLU. There's always someone to dig into, right?
Right.
There are very few episodes where I'm like, I don't like any of these people. Who cares?
Well, yeah. Well, you've got to have a broad knowledge of pretty much everything, because you are a quiz master, right? Tell us what you do, Noah.
So in my 20s, I decided I liked trivia and wanted to write trivia and couldn't get a job doing it. So I started hosting sort of a bar trivia night. I tried to make it a little bigger than that, and it kind of took over my life. And I found myself having fallen backwards into being an entrepreneur. So I run a company. It's called The Big Quiz Thing, and we do trivia events for corporate and private parties. We don't do public quizzes at bars or anything like that. We just do like corporate events and team building and fundraisers and, you know, birthday parties and bar and bat mitzvahs. And I founded it 22 years ago in New York. So it's a lot, and I'm still the creative director. I still, if not write all the material, I edit all the material. But I tell you, man, and the older you get, the harder it is to keep up with culture. So it's definitely one of these jobs that gets harder the older you get. But I'm hanging on. I'm hanging on for now. And I think still doing a great job. So, you know, going to keep trying. Not going to give up till it's time to give up.
You have to be aware that Robin wasn't in the Tim Burton movies and things like that, unlike your editor.
I need to know these things. And I need to know the rumors that Damon Wayans was going to play Robin in Batman Returns. So
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and still gets a paycheck, apparently, from it.
What?
He got paid for it and still gets, like residuals from the movie he was never in, apparently, which is...
Are you serious? I thought that was just a crazy rumor, but he actually signed a contract or something?
Yeah, yeah. I know he got paid for it, and I think he actually still gets, like...
A residual for participation. Something he's not in.
Because he paid... He was in a pay-or-play kind of situation, and so he gets...
Insane.
Yeah, I think he still makes money off Batman Returns.
That is so stupid.
Yeah.
Hey, I like Batman Returns. It's my favorite of those movies.
You know, I've always liked it, and I've come around to really liking it more and more over the last few years. I really... And I love just saying, you know, it's a Christmas movie. Like, you know, people say Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah.
Batman Returns is definitely a Christmas movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's... I'm a bit of an iconoclast of Batman movies. Like, my all-time favorite Batman movie is The Dark Knight Rises, which I told some people, and they think I'm insane, but... You know, and it's sort of similar to why I like JLU is I just like, you know, as a kid who grew up as a DC, I always like Marvel, but I always like DC more. And, you know, I discovered the Fire and Water Network because of the Who's Who podcast. I just love all the depths of the history and especially Batman. And I like that The Dark Knight Rises really just covers so many elements of Batman's story. Like, I remember after seeing the movie listing all the legendary Batman story arcs that were, like, to my mind at least, somewhat referenced in that movie.
Yeah.
And 7, 8, 9, you know, just so much happens in that movie, and I felt it had a big expansive feel that I always want those movies to have. It was big without being like, you know, the Flash movie big, where it was just too much and too much is going on, and I don't need 1,000 multiverses. I just want a big sprawling story that still seems somewhat plausible, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, with Dark Knight Rises, I mean, it's honestly not my favorite of those three, but I will say that I do kind of like the ending. Is very much Earth 2 Batman, you know?
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Speaking of which, we're talking about the daughter produced by that. If they made a sequel to Dark Knight Rises, maybe it would be about the Huntress, you know?
It might, and maybe she'd team up with, you know, Robin that was revealed at the end of the...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, why not? Yeah.
I take that over a lot of other movies we've gotten in the superhero genre.
True, very true. Well, since you did a nice segue to the Huntress, let's jump into Grudge Match, which originally aired March 11th, 2006. The story was by Matt Wayne with a teleplay by JMD Mateus. Seems like I've heard of that guy before. Mm-hmm. Directed by Joaquin Dos Santos. In the cast, we had Marina Baccarin as Black Canary, Amy Acker as the Huntress, Virginia Madsen as Roulette, Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, Maria Canales as Shiera and Fire, Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, Juliet Landau as Tala, Gina Torres as Vixen, Corey Burton as Brainiac, Sonar, and Beto Waldon, who is that? Who's that character? That's what it said on his IMDb. Okay,
I think that's the guy that brings the money box up to Roulette.
Okay, that makes sense. And Jeffrey Combs as the Question and an assistant.
Roulette is crestfallen at the state of her Metabrawl gambling enterprise, reduced to Z-list villains battling in seedy dives. Sonar brings her into the Hall of Doom to meet with Luthor, who is, of course, trying to revive Brainiac, and talking to a version of the living computer who isn't there. Roulette complains Lex is taking too much of her profits and taking away her best fighters. When she tries to come on to Lex, Tala gets angry, and this gives them the idea for an all-female version of Metabrawl. But Lex has a better idea than just battling supervillains.
Sometime later, the Huntress witnesses an exhausted Black Canary struggling to apprehend a simple pickpocket. Canary refuses her help, so she decides to tail her. She finds her leaving her apartment and follows her to a building in Bloodhaven, where she meets up with JLU member Fire. After taking out some of the guards, Huntress slips into civilian clothes and makes her way into the arena in time to watch the grisly battle between Canary and Fire.
Fire manages to give Canary burns on her wrist, but her sonic scream puts Fire out, both figuratively and literally. When Huntress approaches her later, Canary attacks. It's only when her Justice League earpiece falls out and is destroyed that Canary comes to. But Huntress was already throwing a knockout blow. The two are then surrounded by goons led by Sonar.
Captured, Huntress fills Canary in on what's going on as they watch doctors tend to the injured Fire in another cell. Canary figures out that somehow Sonar hacked into the JLU communicator earpieces with mind control tech stolen from Grodd. Rillette stops by to gloat and inform them that now they'll have to be eliminated since they can't be controlled. But she makes lemons out of lemonade by announcing a new title card, Black Canary and Huntress versus Vixen and Hawk Girl.
Another brutal battle ensues, but eventually they are able to destroy the League earpiece, first in Vixen and then Shiera. But their problems just got worse, as Rillette announces a battle royale against a fifth opponent, Wonder Woman. The amazing Amazon mops the floor with him, but Shiera is able to break the force field surrounding the arena with her mace. Huntress and Black Canary head to the control box. Canary destroys Sonar's sonic disrupting gun with her canary cry, and Huntress takes out Rillette. They shut down the mind control device just as Wonder Woman was about to slam Shiera's and Vixen's heads together.
The villains are taken away and the battered heroes lean on each other as they leave the arena. But Huntress brags she was handing Canary her butt in the battle that she can't remember. They decide to settle the argument with a best 2 out of 3 fall fight. So before we dive into this blow by blow, a comment was left by the network's favorite nephew, Isamu, who had this to say. The next episode is the one with all those I watch JLA for the plot memes, isn't it? Yes, it is. This show was produced by mostly male creators and features a cast of female characters in tight or revealing costumes fighting one another. Did you find it overly salacious, Cindy?
Not really. I mean, you know, it was one of those cases they were fighting, you know, so.
Yeah, okay. All right, Noah?
Not overly salacious, and in fact, I think they did a good job of sidestepping that. First of all, this episode passes many episodes of Justice League and JLU do not, but this passes the Bechdel test.
Okay.
Because the characters, there's more than one female character, and they do talk to each other about something other than a man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're fighting, and the fighting feels real. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, foxy boxing. It's there for men to ogle over. And also, I like the use of Sonar as the sort of annoying, jerky villain here, because he's the one who brings up the idea of women fighting. Like, he cheers Tala attacking Rillette. And by making him into a bit of a clown, and he's the ogler, it sort of puts any guy who wants to see that from a salacious point of view on it, well, if he has any self-awareness, on his back foot,
right?
Because it basically casts all guys who are looking at it from that point of view as kind of clods. So I thought it was a good way of sidestepping that. And, you know, the women hit damn hard in this. I mean, there's nothing. There's no punches pulled. They're all tough as nails. Like, I feel like they do a good job sidestepping that. That said, that Huntress costume with the open midriff and the you know, the thighs open, I don't know, that's a little much, but blame Jim Lee for that.
That's right, that's Jim Lee, yeah. I don't think this was as blatantly male-gazy as the previous Rillette Meta Brawl episode, The Cat and the Canary, because that had all that Green Arrow, Black Canary.
Well,
you know.
And the whole thing, the part that gets me in The Cat and the Canary, when she takes off her jacket in that particular episode, she bounces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, dude. And I actually watched for that in this.
Yeah.
There was no quote-unquote bounce, if you know what I'm talking
about.
No,
I mean, like her, yes, her breasts were independently animated to move, like, when she did that. And, like, I mean, that was, yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Well, you know me, I'm going to say it.
I know. So, yeah, I don't think this one, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of very, you know, of course, Bruce Timm, he designed most of these characters, are all based on his style. He's got a whole book, you know, of you know, artwork full of very, you know, beautiful women in his style and very sexy and mostly naked. And Cindy bought me that book, not realizing that.
Yeah, didn't realize
it was a hard R, but which is kind of funny. But it's there. But I think you're right. I think they do it pretty tastefully. They do make the ogler look like a total, you know,
yeah.
It's like,
never mind that he's dressed like a drum major. He looks like an idiot anyway.
That's right.
That was probably a Gil Kane costume going all the way back to the 60s or something. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's just straight up the way he looked in the comics. So, yeah. So we start off in the new, very low rent Meta Brawl. The two combatants in the ring are Shatterfist from the creator's favorite utility villain team, the Cadre, first enemies of Justice League Detroit, and Hellhound, a villain from the Jim Ballant Catwoman series in the 90s who I honestly had to look up. I couldn't remember who that was. I'm like,
I knew he was familiar, but yeah. Yeah. Anything post Who's Who, sometimes I have trouble digging it from my memory. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought, is that some weird version of Catman?
Because he's very, that's what I thought it was.
Because he's very orange.
Yes.
But and Hellhound isn't that orange in the comics, but no, it's supposed to be Hellhound. So, yeah. So, this is a really lame fight, though, right?
Oh, my gosh. It reminds
me.
Well,
it's supposed to be.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of this fight that my boyfriend at the time got into.
Oh, gosh.
I was just like, oh, my gosh.
That was the lamest fight I've ever seen. They were literally like, just like, it was almost like the, you know, when you see people like in a movie or a cartoon, like they go up to each other and they turn their heads and just kind of slap at each other. That was basically that fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was admit beautiful. It. This boyfriend was Chris, right? It was Chris.
Oh, no.
No, this was the guy. This was the guy I stole her away from.
Oh, all right.
It is.
If only he knew how to fight better, you know?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, but they're just like circling each other, and they just keep doing the bring it motion with their hands, you know, which the crowd's booing, and yeah, it's.
I'm sorry. I mean, I've only been in one fight, and that is not how it went down. Yeah. I'm like, no.
Well, I think, you know, there's posturing. A lot of people who say they want to fight don't want to fight. They'll posture, and they're waiting for the other guy to make a move, or they're cowards.
Right.
But they don't want to show that they're cowards. And, you know, I mean, obviously, it's become such a low rent operation at this point that any way you could show that this is a bad night out for the people in the audience.
Yes.
Yeah. You know. One of the patrons is asleep at his table when the waitress comes up, you know, brings his drink. So Roulette, voiced again by Virginia Madsen, is none too happy with their take from this because no one's betting. But even she says, who can blame them? So.
Oh, yeah, it's lame.
Then we cut to the Hall of Doom. I'm still calling it that. And Lex is trying once again to reconstitute Brainiac from the small chunk that Grodd had. He's unsuccessful, but he can hear and apparently see Brainiac talking to him, pushing him along to try another method. So is a part of Brainiac still in Lex's mind, or is he just so obsessed and longing to be reconnected with him that he's nuts now?
I wonder that too. That was my thought. Is he actually having a connection with Brainiac, or is he just DeLulu?
Yeah, DeLulu.
Nice. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's like, where does one end and the other begin? Mm-hmm. Like, he was so merged with Luthor, with Brainiac, that it infected him. And even if there's no physical spore remaining, you know, like, it's definitely in his head. So it drove him crazy. So whether there's a physical element to it or not, by now there might as well be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's become obsessed with it for so many reasons. So, you know, I guess it's an interesting question, but it ultimately, I mean, as if these are real people, it ultimately is unanswerable.
Right. Well, and somebody brought up, and I'm sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head, in the comment section of the last episode, somebody brought up that the Watchtower Database YouTube series posited a theory that Grodd was basically messing with Lex's mind about Brainiac. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. I don't really buy into that, but that would be like, especially because right now I don't think Grodd can do that because they've got him captured with that thing over his head to keep him from doing it. It'd be interesting if he planted that in his mind to begin with and it's still going, you know, but I don't really like that. I don't subscribe to it, but it's an interesting theory, so. Brainiac, voiced once more by Corey Burton, suggests he construct a positronic event chamber. And Lex agrees it might work, but where would he get the money? I'm sorry, since when does a supervillain worry about that?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, go steal it.
I think that happens in comics a lot. They're like, I need the money, I'm running out, my goons suck, you know. I feel like that's a bit of a story, like the crook who's fallen on hard times and has to accept the job he doesn't want.
Well, you have to think they
run in the Legion of Doom, you know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
well, you have to think in the Flash episode, they're like, we're not kicking in for that. You know, you've got this whole bunch of supervillains, you know, his gallery, and they're like, well, you know, you pay it this month and I'll pay it this month, but man, I got to make the mortgage, you know.
Yeah, they're like, I've got my Captain Boomerang's like, I've got my overhead or whatever. Yeah, so that's true. Yeah, I mean. You have a team of minions you can send if you don't want to get your hands dirty. I understand wanting to keep a low profile and have some legitimate income and transactions, but if you really need it, I don't know. It just seems kind of weird for, like, they're literally in this headquarters full of supervillains and are like, how are we going to get any money?
Well, I think it's weirder with what we see later. Like, he's got the power to hack into the earpieces and hypnotize the most powerful members of the Justice League. Like, really, man? You're desperate to, like, get some action here? Like, that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah.
So I kind of think this is an instance of Luther not, you know, being as much of a creative thinker as we really know he's capable of.
Well, I guess we can chalk it up to he is so obsessed with reviving Brainiac. Yes. That he's just not on his game right now. Because
good point. Yes,
I was gonna. Yeah, I will eventually get to what you just brought up. That when we get to that, because that I never really thought about that before until, you know, this is another one of those cases when you do a podcast, you analyze things to the point where you really like, oh, I wish I hadn't thought of that, because now, you know.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No, I did the same thing, so don't feel bad. So yeah,
it took me out of the story a little, but again. Why? Because cartoons.
Right.
Because comics.
Right, exactly. It's just have fun with it. This is a fun episode. Mm-hmm. I want to pick it to death. But he does mention the government freezing his assets and running this secret society is depleting his fundage. So, I mean, yeah, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy being Lex, you know, I mean, obviously.
It's not easy not having the green.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There you go.
not having the Jack Kirby armor superpowers green costume.
There you go. Tala is, of course, hovering around Lex, no matter how hot and attentive she is. That would just be annoying, I think, you know, that she's just, like, constantly just like, what are you doing? Huh? What are you doing now? you know, what were you doing a few minutes ago? You know?
I do that to you sometimes just to make you mad.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. she tells Sonar he's talking to his imaginary friend again, and this is the first time we've really seen much of the Silver Age Green Lantern baddie, Sonar. And he's voiced here by Corey Burton as well. As you said, he pretty much looks just like Gil Kane designed him back in the 60s. So, and although he's, I think, wasn't Sonar like, I didn't look up his bio. I probably should have. But wasn't he like from some foreign country or something that he was like,
yes,
like the royal, like something? Or I don't know. There was something.
I think of him from, there was an Elongated Man miniseries from the early 90s, drawn or maybe even written by Ty Templeton. And they went to that, they were invited to that country and they went there and they, Sue and Ralph, and they were honored. And there was something about Sonar taking over the country. I mean, it was a fun miniseries because it was sort of semi-comedic within the Elongated Man.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had some real wacky name. You know, it was one of these Balkan countries that are made up for comics.
Right.
Yeah, something like that.
We don't get any of that here. He's just kind of a horny lech kind of more.
Chickapalooza.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
I hated that line, but at least the other characters look at him like, you are a moron when he says that.
Yeah, the eyebrow, yeah. And like, yeah. Lex gives him like, and they all, the women are just like, oh my God. Yeah. But Sonar's just there to introduce Roulette. But she's apparently part of this Legion, the Secret Society, too, because although she's very complimentary and sly, but she's basically telling Lex, you're skimming my revenue a bit too much. And Lex says, I've seen the books. So I it's just amazing that Lex, like, he's going over, like, business ledgers and, you know, he's got, you know, like, supervillain QuickBooks, you know, going.
Well, yeah.
He's probably the kind of guy who, like, looks over ledgers to relax, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
To have fun. Like, I don't know if you ever watched The West Wing, but the president on that show was made out to be the super genius, and he said he balances his checkbook for fun.
Yeah.
Like, the president balanced his own checkbook because it was fun.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. Well, Lex was a business tycoon, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. And a super mega genius. So there you have it.
Right. Yeah. She says Lex is also taking her star attractions. She suggests she could have some big guns like Bizarro or Sinestro, or Bizarro versus Sinestro. As she says this, she's running her finger all over Lex's arm and chest, and that gets Tala all worked up.
Uh-huh.
She blasts her with her mystical energy and pushes her away from Lex, saying,
back off, hot pants. Give the man some space.
But
where's Tala supposed to be from? Did they establish this?
I don't know, but she's like we've said, she's like literally like Natasha from, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle, basically. Yep. But I just like to get Cindy to say it because I like it when she does that voice. But she calls her hot pants, but
she's got a dress on.
Yeah, she's got a full length dress with a big split up the side of it. It's like, that's not hot pants. What Supergirl wore in the '70s? That's hot pants.
Yes.
Those, you know,
I feel like fire in the early '90s in the JLI, Fire wore, or at least part of it. Like, I feel like she wore hot pants, or maybe it was like cut off jeans, something like that. She went through a few different costumes.
Yeah, she had something like that. I mean, kind of. It's and of course, what she's wearing in here is what like Adam Hughes designed minus the jacket.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She, I think she did, but that's. What she's got on is are not hot pants, which is just kind of weird.
I think Roulette has an amazing design. Mm-hmm. I think visually she is stunning. Everything works together really well. The snake tattoo. I mean, that is a great character design.
Yeah. She is. She's cool. Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty much straight from the comics, you know, when she showed up in the JSA comics, so for the first time. And like we pointed out, Sonar says, wait, let him fight a minute. Just like, and he's so disappointed when Lex says there'll be no fighting. It's just like, he's got this hangdog look. Just
like. Again.
Yeah. Lex says Sonar has given him the solution to his and Roulette's problems, and Roulette quickly picks up on the idea of an all-girl fight. She calls it Meta Brawl Glamour Slam, or the Bells of the Brawl, and then that's when Sonar adds. What's he add, Noah?
Chickapalooza.
Yeah. I think we've picked on poor Sonar enough, but Roulette is excited.
Not enough.
We will again.
Also, he's a cat. Well, we'll get to it. He's a coward later. He shows himself to be a coward.
So. Yeah. Oh, he definitely does. Yeah. Roulette is excited, but says that it won't work with second string villains, and Lex adds, who said anything about villains, as we cut to the commercial break. And after the opening titles, we're presumably in Gotham, because we've got the red skies from the new Batman Adventures back. And Black Canary is chasing a crook who just keeps getting the best of her. I was still shocked this time watching it again when that guy just punched her down.
I know. And especially when you find out he's nothing, you know?
Yeah, I'm like, wow. I mean, we find out why, but it's still shocking to see Black Canary get punched by some dude and just knocked down.
That said, she very craftily got him somehow to run towards where her bike was parked. So that worked out really well for her.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm nitpicking. You said you didn't want to, but I am nitpicking.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, he could have stole her bike, you know, but maybe she had... Yeah. She's got some kind of, you know, launches a net off of it, or a fish net. A fish net.
Ooh, that'd be great.
We should add that Marina Baccarin continues to add to her geek credit, as if the Deadpool films weren't enough. She has now been cast as the Sorceress in the Masters of the Universe film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good casting, I think, right there. I like that. Now, Jared Leto as Skeletor.
No.
Haven't you ruined enough genre movies, Jared Leto?
I mean, they can't get back Frank Langella? Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah. I'd see Frank. I mean, get him back. He was great as Skeletor.
Yeah,
he was the best part about that movie, for sure. Yeah. Great Dracula.
Best or only good thing.
Yeah, right. Only good thing, yeah. Great Dracula, too. So, Canary tackles the guy, and the Huntress is standing there up against a dumpster, critiquing her moves, saying she's never seen her so sloppy. She asks if she needs a hand, and she says, not from you. So I guess they are still pretty bitter over their fights in the episode Double Date.
Mm-hmm.
Just a smidge, yeah. She lets the guy run past her, and you can tell he's like, okay, should I? Are you going to let me run past you? You know, I love that. He kind of hesitates, like, aren't you a superhero? Aren't you going to try to stop me? You know? Then she pulls a Captain America and takes him out with a trash can lid thrown around the corner of the alley, which I like. That's awesome. A nice move. Yeah. She asks what the now unconscious thug did. When she responds that he stole a wallet, I love Amy Acker's delivery of Huntress's line.
Shut up! You got creamed by a pickpocket?
Yeah. She's almost got that kind of valley girl kind of, shut up. Like, you know, just like real, like, oh my God, gag me with a spoon or something. It's like really,
you know, that's
cut over the top.
That's what I love about this show. That's what I love so much about the DCAU. They gave all these characters distinct personalities. There were distinct, unique relationships among various pairings of them. You know, something that more consistently better characterization on these shows than DC Comics of any era you care to name. You know, the, in general, they just, everyone was different. Everyone had a different personality. And you saw this, you know, it wasn't just any two random heroines talking to each other. It was Huntress and Black Canary with their past talking to each other. And you see it in a line like that, how she was needling her. She was taking a lot of pleasure in saying, you got creamed by a pickpocket. And that pleasure is kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Huntress asks if she's okay, and Canary asks, worried, and she just says curious. She drives off on her motorcycle and says, I didn't think you cared about anyone. And that's not really fair considering she knows she is having a mad affair with the question.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, she, you know, she cares about the question.
Yeah.
So.
I like you.
Yeah, right. Huntress not so suddenly shoots a tracer on the seat of Canary's bike. She really must be tired to not have noticed that, you know, big ka-thunk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Canary goes back to a very nice apartment, and Huntress is watching her through binoculars on a nearby roof while she talks to the question, and she says, you think she's moonlighting? Maybe she's stepping out on Green Arrow. So what do we think about superheroes gossiping about one another, Cindy?
Dude, they're a couple. You and I gossip about everybody. I mean, come on.
Well, there you go, Noah.
I mean, but again, they're human beings, you know? Like, they're given this kind of texture. That they're like normal people, and that especially if you have a league, you have a group, you have a community, people are going to talk. I mean, I feel like maybe I'm reading into it, but we get some more of this later in the episode when Vixen and Hawkgirl are paired off, you know, because they have a history.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I love it. I love that they're gossiping. It mm-hmm. makes them more relatable. It makes them more real.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. I think, like you said, it adds to that, the dimension to them. And it's it would have to be the Huntress talking to the question about Black Canary, you know, and mm-hmm. with the Green Arrow thing, because they had that double date episode where they fought, you know. So, yeah, it's perfect. And I love that the question asks why she even cares. Isn't this the woman who beat the snot out of you a few months back?
Yep.
And she said she got in a lucky shot, or five or six.
Yeah.
We see that the question is in some kind of cold room with his breath visible somehow through that mask. Then he opens a tub revealing some pink ice cream with red swirls. And what does he find, Noah?
Aha! Just as I suspected. 32 flavors. I just love that the question considers this a priority. A, that he considers this a priority, and B, that he's in the Justice League, that they let a guy in who does stuff like this.
Exactly. He's a wackadoo.
Well, like Batman said, I'll admit, he's wound a little too tight, you know?
Batman says this.
Batman said that.
Mr. Krabs Diamonds, he's so wound.
Right.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I laughed out loud the first time I saw that.
I know it. Yeah. It all goes back to, you know, like when Huntress walked in this room. Oh, I didn't know the Girl Scouts were connected to the crop circle phenomenon. Few people do. Few people think to ask the question, you know? So it's like, of course Baskin-Robbins is involved in some kind of conspiracy in hiding a 30-second flavor, you know?
Yeah.
I have to ask, I've always liked the look of the question, but I've never read many of his stories. Has he ever been played for laughs in the comics? Or she, I guess, because there was a female question for a while.
Right.
So
there's,
has the character ever, like, funny conspiracy theorist?
No, I think the JLU brought the conspiracy theorist part to the character, really.
Really?
I think they've kind of, which, I mean, kind of via Rorschach, you know, because the question, the Rorschach's based on the question, and then they, you know, Rorschach's portrayal in Watchmen kind of influenced the question and in different ways. And I don't think, though, for humor, either Vic Sage, this question, or it's Renee Montoya, you know, oddly enough, the cop introduced in Batman the Animated Series, that's the question now. And I don't, or maybe they're on to a different one now, but it's still a female. But I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure it's Renee still. She was the question anyway. There's a female question in the new JLU comic, but I don't know if it they said who it was. But I don't know if they've ever been played for laughs, you know, like they are. Because, you know, I mean, Steve Ditko was pretty took his stuff pretty seriously, and he was kind of using the question as an early version of his objectivist Anne Rind hero, you know. So, I don't think so. But yeah, this is probably the funniest version of the question.
Again,
I mean, he's kind of a funny looking character too. I feel like it's not a million miles away to just look at this dude and think we can play him for laughs, you know?
Right, right. And of course, you know, he looks like the Blank, the Dick Tracy villain, was also, you know, Dick Tracy was equal parts humor and just violence, you know, in the early days.
Oh, so, yeah.
What are you going to say, Cindy?
No, I'm just saying, Bruce Timm's version of any DC character is the ultimate best version.
Often, yes, I agree.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I know I'm right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Huntress rests back and she says, "So, what are you wearing?" To which the question flatly answers, "Blue overcoat, fedora." She says, "You really stink at this, orange socks."
I can see me having this, trying to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, I didn't mean to make you blush. Sorry.
I like trying to imagine a backstory. Like, question is like, oh, I'm losing her. I have to charm her because I do want her. Maybe orange socks will get her hot, you know?
Right.
Like, what conversations have they had in the past where he thinks orange socks is the way to, you know, melt her heart?
Right.
You know, fill in your own backstory there. Have a good time.
Yeah. So she hangs up, and that's the last we hear of the wonderful Jeffrey Combs as the question in this series. I really wish he was more involved in this episode. I know they wanted to keep it focused on the female characters.
Yeah.
But I love the question, and I love this version of the question so much, and Jeffrey Combs is so awesome in everything that I really wish he came back, at least at the end, like he showed up at the end or something. You know,
he does, but he doesn't have dialogue. He's in the finale. He has a great moment in the finale with no dialogue.
Yeah, remember that? Right. Yes. Yeah. He's in the finale. He doesn't have he's there, and he runs out with a spoiler warning. He runs out with the other Steve Ditko characters. Mm-hmm. So
no, but before that,
he
kicks some alien butt.
Oh yeah. He's in it. Yeah, pretty much everybody's in it. But as far as like, you know, getting to speak and Jeffrey Combs being there, I miss him already. So
of course, I tell you, after they do the Flash spinoff, they should do the Question animated spinoff.
I bet you Jeffrey Combs would be down for it. You know, so yeah,
I'd watch the crap out of that. That's for sure.
I mean, you know, honestly, Jeffrey Combs. I mean, they could just, with the mask the way it is, he could play him in live action still.
Yeah.
I know Jeffrey Combs is like at least in his 60s, but still, you know.
One of the times I went to New York Comic Con, I probably still have the photo somewhere. I saw a guy cosplaying the Question.
Yeah.
And it looked really good. I don't know what he had on his face, but it looked pretty awesome. And the dude was just walking around, clearly could see. So it was one of the most impressive costumes I saw.
Wow. That'd be cool.
Yeah. And like, who knows who this guy, I mean, this guy could have been 60. He could have been a woman. I couldn't really tell at all. It was such a great costume.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'd love to see that. Huntress then hears Canary's motorcycle start and tails her on her own motorcycle. They cross a bridge and a sign reads, "Welcome to Bloodhaven, population 1,157,899. So much smaller than Gotham, but still a pretty good size city, you know. So
I mean, one of the 10 biggest cities in the country at that size, if the DC AU America is anything like ours.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we get a famous blink and you will miss it cameo.
Yep.
The camera is up high looking down at the bridge. We pass by a series of ornamental gargoyles on a roof, but the third one moves, and this is who, Noah?
It's got to be Nightwing.
That's right. Yes, you can see the outline of his mask and his new Batman Adventures mullet. So this is definitely Nightwing. The producers couldn't use any Batman characters other than the Dark Knight himself at this point because of the Batman animated series, not the Robert Pattinson movie, but the animated series from the same time period. It was in production, but they snuck Dick Grayson in, and they're in his town, of course. So, and actually, in the Batman Beyond Return of the Joker movie, Barbara Gordon says to Terry McGinnis, by that point, Dick had moved to Bloodhaven. Mm-hmm. So, like in the comics, Dick had moved from Gotham to Bloodhaven at that point. So, mm-hmm. It actually jibes with the continuity they already established, too. So, it's a shame we don't get to see him or hear Lauren Lester as Dick, but it was great that they stuck him in, though. So.
I do remember thinking this was a bit of a tease. I remember going, oh, Nightwing's going to show up. That's going to be cool. And like later remembering the episode, like, hey, what happened to Nightwing? I didn't know about the bad embargo, so, you know.
Yeah.
But whatever, you know, knowing what I know now, it's cool they added him in there. Why not?
Bad embargo or not, if you threw Dick Grayson into that room full of all them women, I don't think Cartoon Network could have aired it.
We now have a DC comic explicitly named after Nightwing's rear end. So
right.
You might be right about that. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Nightwing. Like the thing is, Nightwing is comic book. Captain America is America's ass in the movies, but Nightwing is comics ass in the comics.
The series was or is. I mean, I read stuff on the app. It's called Nightwing and Nothing But BUTT.
Yeah.
And the cover of the first issue is like, you know, I mean, you see his whole body, but definitely the eye is drawn to the shapely costumed rear ends of Dick Grayson.
Right. Cindy's over here with her mouth agape. She wasn't aware of this.
I haven't read it. I can't tell you any more than that.
I haven't. From the same company that's now bringing you the Harley Quinn fart special, where she's literally...
Oh, come on, really?
Yeah, no, it's for real. It's an April Fool's comic that's coming out. It's literally Harley Quinn farting on the cover with green gas coming from her rear end.
I mean, I saw... Did you see the animated movie Batman and Harley Quinn? Because that's... There's a good fart joke in there. I guess that's what inspired.
Yeah.
And that was good. That was really funny. I watched it on a plane, and it might be one of the best movies I've ever seen on a plane.
Okay,
it's
good.
Very, very funny, but there's a good... She's basically in the backseat of the Batmobile with Batman and Nightwing, and they get some good, you know, fart humor out of it.
Right.
You know, which, hey, every now and again, that's called.
Yeah. but we digress, sorry. Huntress trails Canary to a parking garage basement, and then sees Fire join her as they use a key card to access an elevator. So then we see Huntress is hacking the card terminal with the tool when the elevator doors open again and reveal a throng of tuxedo-wearing goons wielding guns. She walks into the elevator and asks, as the door closes, going down. And you then hear her whooping their butts. As, which I like.
Very satisfying.
When the doors open, they are all unconscious. And she waltzes out. Did this remind anyone of the scene in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, that came nearly 10 years later?
I didn't think of that, but absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. Obviously, that one of the most memorable scenes in any of the MCU films. So, but she does that. I mean, I love that she's saying going down, because they're going down, you know. So I love the double meaning there.
I've seen a version of that in other stuff. You know, the hero gets in the elevator, the doors close, you hear, and the hero's beating all of them. I feel like that's, I want to say a cliche, but like that's shown up elsewhere, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably like, you know, like somebody catching an arrow in midair or something like that. It's been done a million times, but it's still cool. So it's, I guess, you're probably right. Huntress takes off her mask and somehow puts on a slinky evening dress to blend in. Where did she get that? Yeah, where'd she get it?
Right. Is it like
what the material is? There is material that you can fold up. I mean, that dress did not take up. It's easy.
Oh, you think she had it like the pouch of her utility belt?
How easy.
But then she's got a bag. Where'd the bag come from?
Fold it out. Rigid sides. Box it out.
Okay. Maybe she's like Barbara Gordon's original Batgirl outfit that she could switch from her clothes to her.
I actually have a purse. Like I can go get it right now. That it literally, it's a bag, but I can pop out the sides and it becomes a rigid bag and gets about two sides bigger.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you and I, Noah, were gobsmacked by this, but Cindy's not.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like remember Superman used to squeeze his Clark Kent clothes
into
like a little square he would put in some pocket in his cape?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking too. He's super compressed. Yeah,
but no, it's a small dress. That, I mean, easy.
Even his shoes, he could do that too, which I'm like, how did he do his shoes that way? You
know? He's Superman, that's how.
Right, right.
She looks fantastic. That's a great color, great dress on her. She looks great.
Yeah, yeah. And do we think she was able to slip in easier because maybe some people recognized her as Helena Bertinelli, the mob daughter?
See, I wonder that too, yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, she wouldn't be out of place. Or I don't know what her... You know, I don't know what her backstory is here. Is she a school teacher like she was in the comics, you know, in her day job? Or is she still, like, running the legitimate side of that family business or what? You know, I don't know. Or maybe she's kind of, you know, maybe she got a toe dipped in to keep connections or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Have we seen Helena Bertinelli not as a huntress in the series before? Do we know what she looks like in the series?
No, I think it's the first time she ever took her mask off. Yeah.
So maybe squeezed up with her bag and her shoes and her dress is like prosthetic, like a fake nose and like contact lenses. So maybe she doesn't really look like that. Maybe she's in disguise.
Oh, yeah, possibly. And it would have been even more impressive if she'd had a rubber mask over top her huntress mask like Batman.
Exactly.
Used to.
Yes.
With those big
horns. Dress goes over the cape.
Right, there you go. I like she grabs a glass of champagne to fit in and sits down in an arena with a device on her chair arm saying, place bets and fighters. Uh-huh. So she's like, oh, wait a minute. Roulette appears on the jumbo screen and welcomes him to Meta Brawl Glamour Slam. So the first ideas are usually the best. Uh-huh. So, you know.
That is quite the transition from what Meta Brawl looked like at the beginning of this episode. It was run down, it was cut rate, and now, like, I mean, how long has it been? It feels like it hasn't been very long. So, like, how did they do the marketing to get all these people there, all the IT people to set everything up? Like, wow, she must have a really efficient team working for her.
Well, and it's kind of interesting. Yeah, exactly. And it's like all these people are, like, in tuxedos and really well-dressed. It's like, how did something like this with this many people in there going on why is it Nightwing there? You know, why isn't he there trying to shut it down?
But you already had everything in place from before when Wildcat was fighting. You just had to flip that switch and put all those things back together. It's not like it instantly just went away. You still had that structure there.
I guess
it was easy just to pop it back out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. But I still just wonder why, you know, Batman and Nightwing aren't on top of this. They're falling down on the job.
They made a good point in the JSA arc that introduced Roulette. They made a good point of kind of this is huge operation that is really, really good at evading the notice of the superhero community. I mean, you know, I don't know how believable it is, but they address that point.
Yeah.
Like it's this massive underground situation in the desert of Nevada or something.
Yeah.
And like they kind of pay lip service to like 2/3 of the operation is dedicated to keeping it away from the prying eyes of superheroes. So, you know, maybe it's something like that.
Yeah, we'll
again,
go for it.
Robert Pattinson Batman does not bother penguins, Colin Firth's penguin, so there you go.
Yeah, Colin Farrell's penguin, yeah.
Farrell,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, all that stuff happened in the Penguin series and Batman didn't show up, so that's true.
Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. A force field of some kind comes over the very tall ring area. I think that's kind of, you know, it's, of course, you know, they've got all the technology of the Legion of Doom and all the members and could be. So, you know, it's the DC universe. It's, you know, they force fields are, you know, you can buy them at Lowe's, you know, I think so. she introduces the combatants as Fire, the blistering babe from Brazil, and the sultry siren of the Sonic Smackdown, the undefeated queen of the Glamour Slam, Black Canary. So I like how she's, you know, she's definitely Roulette's very, very good at her job of emceeing these things. And Virginia Madsen's like she's all in, you know. I mean, with somebody like, you know, she's a pretty big actress. I mean, she could have like just been like read some lines and went on, but no, she's like fully engaged as this character. Mm-hmm. I mean that's again Andrea Romano, the voice caster, voice director of all the great Tim animated series. She got the best out of
definitely.
Yeah.
I always liked Virginia Madsen. I felt like she was one of these actresses who was everywhere in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, now I think of her from Sideways, which is around the same time that this came out, I think.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But yeah, she's, I feel like she was always someone who was primed to be A-list and never quite got.
Yeah, she's kind of always, yeah, she shows up in stuff, but in a lot of things. But yeah, she didn't quite, you're right, break that bubble. Yeah, unfortunately. But I think she's probably doing pretty well for herself because she still shows up in everything. So,
sure.
Yeah, so Canary has been doing this for a while, hence her tiredness. So who else has she fought and beaten, do you think?
I know, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, like, did she fight Batgirl? Did she...
Yeah, who?
I mean, who else in the league? Like, I was trying to think of... There's Ice, there's, you know, who? What other female members am I not thinking?
Stargirl,
yeah. I don't think she fought Big... Big Barter would have been a good one to be in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, but they already got Wonder
Gypsy.
Woman. Gypsy? Oh, yeah. Yeah, Gypsy would have been a good one. Yeah.
There are so many members of the league that we, like, never see or hardly ever see. Mm-hmm. Like, Crimson Fox shows up in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I reread it recently. If you look at the first JSA arc with Roulette, they kind of say that before the JSA, it's, like, D-listers. It's,
right.
like, members of, you know, that group that fought Blue Beetle and the Teen Titans and members of the New Guardians. So
yeah.
It could just be a bunch of no-name people. I mean, I guess they need the Justice League, you know, communicators to need to technically be in the league, but
right,
we're sort of led to believe that the league is like every superhero there is. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I feel like there's an endless supply.
That's true. Yeah, I'm just curious, like who she's beaten. Although it doesn't take much to realize that Black Canary can pretty much beat anybody. So even though she's just, you know, human with the sonic scream, but still. She's obviously one of the best fighters in the DCU. I mean, that's from the comics. So, of course, Helena is shocked by all this. The fight is pretty quick, but brutal. Canary gets the first kick in. Then fire flames on, and Canary is dodging her blasts all over the place. And I know you were speaking about this earlier, Noah, off air. The animation in this one is really solid and fluid, and the battle scenes just look fantastic.
Looks great. The action in this episode, top to bottom, is just super.
Yeah, I agree.
Although, to nitpick again,
okay,
the entire inner surface of that ring is very, very flame retarded because nothing gets burned.
That's true. Yeah.
Right?
Except Black Canary's wrist for some reason, even though...
Yeah, exactly. The floor, not even singe.
No.
You don't see smoke, nothing. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and when Canary, she gets hit mid-backflip, and somehow it burns her forearms because it looks like she hit her in the back and like her hair, which is like, is that her hair or is that a wig? You know, like the
oh,
that wig is flame retardant.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But anyway, Canary then goes for a finishing move mode and unleashes the Canary Cry and blows fire back, extinguishing her flame and sending her into one of the jumbo screens, and she crashes to the floor and then lifts her head and then goes unconscious. So it's pretty brutal. I mean, it's pretty brutal. The crowd goes nuts. Fire's beaten body descends through the floor panels. And Canary lets out a victory. Ah! Which
is stupid.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the one note in this episode that I don't think Marina Baccarin had that yell in her or something, or they should have let her do the Canary Cry.
Yes,
or something. That's my one little sour note of the acting in this episode. Is it me and Cindy obviously think so? Did you notice that, Noah?
I kind of liked it.
Okay,
I thought it kind of showed that whatever they're doing to these heroes, they've really reduced them to savagery, and it had a sort of, you know, Queen of the Jungle kind of, you know, standing over my fallen enemy screaming kind of thing.
Okay.
So I kind of dug it. I thought it really showed the animalistic nature of what's happened to these superheroes.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, I'll buy that. After the fight, Huntress confronts her in the parking garage. She asks her what's wrong with her because she almost killed Fire. Is she undercover? Is Roulette blackmailing her? Then Canary roundhouse kicks her into a support column, and she stalks to her and says, "You've got worse than that coming." And we axe kick into a commercial break, which is really quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then that blow, when we come back, breaks some of the concrete off the column. Which,
I know. I mean, would that really happen, though? Because, you know, Canary is not... I mean, yes, her voice is super powered, but her body is not. Would that have worked?
Hey, in Batman Year One, it shows Bruce Wayne, like, literally chopping through a chimney, going, "I'm not ready." You know, so...
I think we're seeing the quick changeover from the low rent operation to the, you know, going back to the big operation. The one thing that cut corners on was building the garage.
Right.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
The support, they faulty concrete for the support beams. They hired, you know, bad construction team. Yeah, there you go.
Right. Okay. They're all unlicensed. They lost their license because they're evil. You know.
Christopher.
Huntress is barely blocking her blows and getting her butt whooped, but she manages to pin her against the column, and Canary inhales for a sonic scream, and Huntress just elbows her right in the throat.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Oh, awesome. Man. Yeah, that was a great move. Yeah.
And thumbs up for the consistency that Black Canary, at least until the final scene, speaks with a hoarse voice for the rest of the episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kept that up. That is awesome. That is one of my favorite moments in the whole episode. Just, but it felt very real in a very unreal kind of situation.
Yeah, Marina Baccarin probably really did have a sore throat after having a talk like that.
Yeah,
for the recording session. But yeah, and I love that. She doesn't even seem like she could. She's pantomiming a lot because she doesn't want to talk.
Right.
Yeah, so I like that. While she's disoriented, Huntress reaches for Dinah's earpiece and says, "Better call the league." And Canary knocks it out of her hand, and Huntress backs up and accidentally crushes it. Canary starts to come to and disorients, says, "What's going on?" and wanders close to Huntress, who cold cocks her.
Yup.
But you can't honestly blame the Huntress right now.
No, she took the sucker punch.
She doesn't know that she's.
Yeah.
She's got to disarm her, basically, disable her. So she. Because she knows in a fair fight, even though at the end, you know, they go for another fair fight, she knows she's a good chance she's not going to be able to beat.
Outclassed. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, beat Black Canary. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Sonar and the goons walk up, and he has her at gunpoint with his sonic tuning fork gun thingy he has. And he thanks her for taking care of Canary for him. So, you know, again, Sonar just lucks into, you know, not really doing anything. So, we cut to them being held in a cell, and Huntress is kind of apologizing for hitting Canary after she was coming out of it. She tells her they've had her up every night fighting in the arena. What'd she say, Cindy?
No wonder he's been fighting like a girl. You know what I mean.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah. They witness Roulette and a medic go into the cell across the hall, housing Fire. Huntress asks if Canary remembers, and she points out her burn. She says it must be some kind of mind control. And Canary suspects that Grodd is involved. And she points to her ear, and after Huntress mistakenly thinks she wants to call the League, she realizes that the comm links in their ear were probably how they were controlling the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is where we get to what we were talking about, Noah. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but you're on the same page I am. I mean, you're a supervillain.
That's some amazing tech. That's incredible.
It's incredible tech. You're a supervillain. You've managed to use a combination of Lex's genius, Sonar's sound technology, and Grodd's mind control device to hack into the Justice League communication network, and you can brainwash the superheroes. Right. You can make them stop what they're doing and come and fight in an arena and make you some money through gambling, or you could take over the minds of mega-powerful heroes like Superman and Wonder Woman, who we'll see later, and steal what you want, sully their good names, find out their secret identities, overthrow governments, and take over the world.
And, like, it's not even just, if we're just the street-level heroes, if we're just Black Canary and Huntress, you know, the people without powers, but Wonder Woman.
Right.
You know, friggin' Wonder Woman. Like, yes, your point exactly. With that kind of power, like, Luthor's problems are over. But, you know, because comics, because cartoons.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially what the Legion of Doom did in the very first episode of Challenge of the Super Friends. Wanted the Super Friends. They mind controlled the heroes into pulling off crimes and sullied their good names and got the Justice League put in jail. Then they took over.
But that's the same show where the Justice League defeated the Legion of Doom by going to the future, reading a history book to learn how they defeated them, then going back in time and doing that.
That's true, too.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, I hope we should, we can expect more from JLU than from Challenge of the Super Friends.
Yes, we should. That's right. That was kind of my point. Yeah, it's like, I mean, if the Super Friends actually even went there, but But again, it's a fun episode, and the whole point was to get, you know, to bring Metabrawl back and to, you know, have another little fun, you know, rivalrous jaunt with the Huntress and Black Canary, and like you said, Vixen and Shiera. So yeah, it's fine. We'll let it go. But
oh, absolutely. We're nitpicking. We're totally nitpicking.
But yeah.
That's the whole point of this podcast, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of this network, you know? That's sort of my take on it.
Well, yeah, but we always try to, you know, we find our joy, but we also don't ignore the fact that, you know, sometimes there's plot holes that you could drive.
It's in the script. Keep going.
Yeah, okay, all
right. Right.
Back to the story. Huntress tells Roulette if Fire dies, she's going down hard. Roulette says, why would she let a viable commodity like her die? But she's going to have to eliminate Canary and Huntress because she can't control them anymore. Why not just put something in? Did they not like design? Can't they just copy the comlinks and pop them in their ears?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. She says with some A-list heroes to do the job, she'll make millions. Again, you could make them a lot easier. But again, I'm going to let that go.
Let it go.
We get a long shot of her swaying away. Now, that was a...
Oh, yeah. That was...
A bit gratuitous.
That was fanboy service.
But I will say, I don't think... As much as I love the DCAU, and I don't think in animation they ever quite got that right, because I know Bruce Timm said he hated the first Poison Ivy episode, Pretty Poison. You know, Pamela Isley's supposed to walk through the restaurant, and all the men are like, wow, you know, and that's when Harvey Dent falls for her. Mm-hmm. And they didn't quite get her walk the way he wanted. And I still don't think they're quite, you know... I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it works the way... I mean, I don't want them to, like, go too far with it, you know. But at the same time, if they're going to do it, it just seems like kind of a waste. I don't know. But
It definitely felt like a Mad Men moment to me, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not an animator. What do I know? But I'm like, there's no way around that, really? But...
Yeah. Roulette announces that they have an extra added attraction tonight. It makes you wonder what the original card was going to be. Because Canary was leaving.
Right.
So was it going to be Shiera versus Vixen, and then the winner fights Wonder Woman?
Or the winner gets Green Lantern. Yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
Same.
Settle that once and for all, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's coming up. They still don't settle it, but it's still coming up. Canary and Huntress rise from the floor in tech manacles. And she introduces them, but says they won't be fighting each other. They'll fight together against Vixen, the beauty with the beast powers, and the Thanagar Thrasher, Hawk Girl. This is one of the few times that we call Hawk Girl, we call Shiera Hawk Girl post-Starcross, but of course Roulette would call her Hawk Girl, because, you know, that's what the audience knows her
as. Oh, yeah, exactly.
So it makes sense. Yeah,
I still call her Hawk Girl. all my notes here say Hawk Girl, and she's Hawk Girl.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. You don't have to do a JLU podcast for, like, Cindy and I, so we have to, like, okay, they call her Shiera, we're going to call her Shiera. So,
right.
Yeah, but they go back to back, and Huntress says,
looks like we're in this together.
And then Canary replies,
if you call me girlfriend, I'm going to drop kick you into the next county. Now, don't go all sentimental on me.
I love that. It's great. Yeah. Again, some nice fighting here. Vixen tackles Canary, and she tries to use the scream on her, but it basically blow dries Vixen's hair.
Yeah.
I like that.
Why do you think that is?
I think because her throat's just, she can't, you know, she can't do it because of her throat injury. She can't.
I was wondering if it's like, oh, because Vixen has the powers of an elephant, like, elephants have stronger hearing. Like, I didn't pick up on that, because I'm like, the power seems a little inconsistent here.
Yeah,
you know, later it comes back pretty strong, you know, pretty soon after.
I think that's why later when Shiera's whacked the force field, Canary says, let me try, you know, like, it's like normally she'd be able to, but now she has to really try to get it to work. So but then, of course, you know, it doesn't work, but she just headbutts Vixen, which I like, so...
By the way, speaking of Vixen being an elephant, I love how the series depicts Vixen's powers.
Yes.
I mean, it's really sharp, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it actually works better than it ever has in the comics, really.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, just the spirit of the animal coming out of the amulet You know, then it kind of like she kind of passes through it sometimes.
She embodies it.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. Vixen's comm link falls out and Canary tries to call the Watchtower. But Roulette sees this and jams it, I guess. She's like messing with some control. Know. So I guess she's like stopping the signal. But Vixen lands on it anyway and is instantly confused. She says, let me give you the short version. So she fills her in. So Vixen actually wasn't a threat that long.
No.
Which that's good for them because they needed all the help they can get. Char is swinging her mace at Huntress and Vixen grabs her from behind saying she doesn't want to hurt her. But then Shira says,
but I want to hurt you.
Yeah. Loaded, perhaps?
Yeah.
You sleeping with my man, you know? She then slams her into the electrifying force field, and Vixen responds,
just when we were starting to get along.
Yeah. Yeah. Canary joins in and does an awesome double kick off the floor into Shira's chin, sending her back. And Vixen is able to call on the power of a boa constrictor or python, some kind of constricting snake, to hold her while Canary takes the comm link out. So that's really good teamwork.
I have a problem with this. This is a problem I have with this.
Okay.
Why on earth is Shiera not kicking off of their butts? Because she was the head, which has been established, she was the head of the defense training for the Thanagarian Empire.
Hmm.
Why is she not more of a powerhouse? Why is she at the level of all of them? She should be above Black Canary.
Hmm.
I have a no prize for this.
Okay, what's your no prize?
The part of your brain that controls things like leadership and strategy and tactics is not controllable via this technology. They can control the knowledge of martial arts, which is why Black Canary is still such a, you know, a butt kicker. But that part of your brain, when you're hypnotized, you don't get command of.
Hmm. Yeah, I could.
I'm trying.
Yeah, that yeah. I buy that as well as anything. Yeah, that it's a good point because they have shown in the past that Shiera like could, you know, not Wonder Woman level, but she can keep her busy.
What I'm saying. Yeah. She's raw. I mean, she's, you know, there's just a smidge difference between
them.
And
I mean, that mace before has literally taken out, like, like the laser cannon on the damn Death Star. It's taken that out, you know? So it's like, you know.
And she has it. So I'm not understanding why they're level. I don't understand it.
Yeah, that part, you're right. She should have been a little, but she was the last one that they, you know, other than Wonder Woman, that they got a hold of, so I guess it kind of makes sense. But the comm link shorts out, so I guess that was Roulette shorting it out, because I think Canary was going to try to call the League again, and it shorts out in her fingers. So Shira starts to come to and looks around and says,
I don't think I want to know.
And Vixen responds, we're all in a cage match fighting to the death.
Yeah, see?
Love that line.
Yeah.
I love that line because it approaches the level of like Marvel MCU cutesiness, but it doesn't quite cross over. It's fun without being like eye-rollingly stupid. I think that's a great, great exchange.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. We should mention that both Marina Baccarin name out of the notes. We should mention that both Marina Baccarin and Gina Torres were in Firefly and Serenity together. And Amy Acker was on another Joss Whedon show, Angel, so small world, and hopefully they survived the Joss Whedon experience. So,
Amy Acker is also in The Cabin in the Woods, which is another Joss Whedon work, which I just love.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And Huntress just has to be all brassy and look up at Roulette and ask,
is that all you got?
You know, she just has to, doesn't she? You know?
Oh, yeah.
And she says, no, I've saved the very best for last. And out of the floor rises
Wonder Woman.
And I think everyone just peed a little.
Mm-hmm. This is such an awesome moment. Such an awesome moment. Because, you know, if you're a DC fanatic and you love the idea of the Trinity, you know, Superman is the number one hero. And Batman's the number one street level hero. And Wonder Woman's the number one heroine. What is the top here? What is the worst thing that can happen to these women right now? Mm-hmm. It's Wonder Woman showing up. And the fact that they're peeing their pants in terror now, really holding Wonder Woman up as like, oh boy, now we're in trouble. I remember seeing this and just going, wow. for the first time.
Yeah.
This is brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, what did you think the first time? So do you remember?
Oh, I was like, oh, dang.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, even Black Canary's got this look on her face like, oh, crap. Which is great, you know. Vixen asked if anyone has a plan, and Shira, who knows Diana best, says,
yeah, try to stay alive.
And then Huntress adds, anyone got a good plan, and fires a crossbow bolt at Wonder Woman.
So stupid.
She can deflect bullets and lasers.
I mean, it's just like,
distraction.
You know, the guy's throwing guns at Superman.
It's Kyle Rayner in the, what was it? Was that Identity Crisis where Kyle Rayner tries, he's got his ring, but he tries to punch Deathstroke?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's that. I hate that fight.
Sorry to bring that up, but that moment, I'm like, what's why?
Yeah, that fight was just, I mean, it's like that whole contingent of the Justice League cannot fight Deathstroke. I know Deathstroke is supposed to be badass, and, you know, but that, and he freaking, that's where he freaking kills Firestorm. It's like,
yes.
Oh my God.
You have the most powerful weapon in the universe, and you try to punch like one of the best fighters on Earth. Like, what is wrong with you? He's Kyle Rayner a lot. So there you go.
Oh, oh man. Oh, we got to get
no,
to
that. He's not that bad. He's not that bad.
Yeah, okay. Because based on our Justice League draft episode we did, we're going to get some hate mail now.
I apologize. He's better than Hal Jordan, but he's not as good as Jon Stewart.
Oh, there you go. That's right. I agree. Yeah. they all take turns, but are basically just trying to stay away from her enough so she can't land the blow. Vixen does manage to judo throw her into the force field, and while she's down, they all dogpile on her. So there was a dogpile in the last episode. There's a lot of dogpiles in this season of Justice League.
I like that they dogpile on her. I think that's like interesting and gets at how powerful she is, but why didn't they go straight for the earpiece? Like, grab the earpiece.
Right. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course, she just knocks them all off. Shire realizes they're getting creamed, and she starts whacking at the force field. There's Shire being smart and tactical, you know, with her magic mace, of course, which in past seasons, as I said, could have destroyed the whole building with one blow, but whatever, you know, we let that feature die a long time ago because they've definitely downgraded the power level of the thing. So she cracks it, and then Canary gives her sonic scream another go and manages to shatter it. I guess she's either trying harder or her voice...
Enough time has passed
that she's able to get a actual Canary cry out. So, But again, nice teamwork, you know, which is good to see. While the crowd boos and throws concessions at them, which I think
really
is...
really great.
Yeah. Yep. Shara picks Canary and Huntress up and flies them into the stands. Poor Vixen. She's like fighting...
I know, they just left her.
She's fighting Wonder Woman by herself. She's got to be like, what the hell, guys?
You know? Yeah.
Well, but I think this is a decent plan. I think let's get the two least powerful, let's get them to fix the problem at the source while the two most powerful keep her busy.
Yeah.
Like, other than grabbing the earpiece, this is the smartest plan they can come up with right now. So sure. Hawkgirl's just dumping them there. She's going to go straight back and help Vixen. So tactically, this made sense.
Yeah, you're right. It does. They head up the stairs through Roulette's goon squad while Vixen does pull the elephant trick that I was kind of wondering why she didn't earlier. But Diana just picks her up and throws her into the audience. Luckily, they scramble because she hits like a Mack truck or an elephant, which I think is great. I mean, it's like almost like an explosion when she hits, you know, which is
very nice. Great moment, great animation moment where I guess Huntress is fighting the goons who come running down the steps. And she basically throws a goon into the camera. And you see the goon's face, and he's like, what's going on? I rewound it and watched it a few times. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the fighting in this one is just, it's so well done. I mean, and if they hadn't done that in this episode, it would have totally fallen flat. I mean, because that's, you know, the bulk of this episode is the fighting. They had to get that exactly right. They had to have good animation. You know, the overseas studio that actually animates from their storyboards had to be on top of their game. Justice League's usually pretty consistent. You know, there were some episodes of Batman the Animated Series where they farmed them out to different studios. You know, one episode would look amazing and the next episode would look really stiff. I mean, there's even two-parters.
That are
like Robin's Reckoning Part 1 is one of the most gorgeous episodes in the series, and then Part 2 is just kind of as far as the look of it. Same thing with Clayface. Part one looks awful. Part two is a freaking masterpiece. But luckily, this was a total win. So Shara pulls Vixen up in time and says to keep her busy while she takes Wonder Woman from behind. But in the chaos, Wonder Woman moves away with Shara nearly smashing Vixen's head in with her base. I mean, it's literally like...
That close.
Yeah. Nice control, though, on the mace, you know. But
and the looks on both of their faces, priceless.
Yeah, they just like look at each other like, oh, like how close did we get? Their pause gives Diana the time to really start beating the stuffing out of Shire after she sweeps her leg. She swept the leg. Yeah.
Yeah. No problem with that, Ms. Prince?
Yeah, exactly.
That might be my favorite action beat in the whole episode.
Oh, really?
Pause, the looks on their faces, there's a moment of silence, the show takes its time with that moment, and then just whoop,
yeah,
Wonder Woman smacks the leg. It's really brilliant. That epitomizes the high quality of the action in this episode in that one moment, in my opinion. There's characterization, there's rhythm, and there's action. Really just brilliantly done.
Yeah, I agree. It's really, really nice. Really nicely done. Shire's able to back kick Diana into some slot machines, and Vixen, you know, congratulates her on a nice move, and she says, "That's all I got." Then Diana picks up a blackjack table and throws it as it cuts back to Huntress and Black Canary, which I love. It's like, yeah, that was a really cool move. It did absolutely nothing. Yeah. Huntress grapple guns her and Canary into the control box, and Canary tells Roulette, "I should have taken you down last time. My mistake." Which, yeah, he probably should have. Yeah, you know, so I know there was the whole, you know, we don't want to get Wildcat in trouble thing, but yeah. She then unleashes the Canary Cry, but Roulette moves out of the way and Sonar blasts her back with his gun, so it's Sonic Beam versus Sonic Scream, which I, you know, nice moment. And, of course, Canary wins, shatters the gun and probably all the glass in a mile radius, apparently, so... there's going to be a lot of people going to their cars in that parking garage that aren't going to have windows anymore.
Well, come on, it looks like they can all afford them. They have 5 cars, you know, big deal.
Right, and they're also, you know, they're doing illegal gambling on, you know, brainwashed superheroes. So they, you know, boo-hoo, right? Yeah.
There are bigger problems in this world.
Right. Huntress gets cocky again and holding Roulette at crossbow point. Says she knows her kind. You like to watch, but when it comes to getting your own pretty hands dirty, and then Roulette kicks the crossbow out of her hand. So I like that the Huntress is fallible like this. She believes her own hype way too much.
Good point, yeah.
She really does. I mean, she's always overconfident. It serves her well in some instances, but at other times, it literally like is like, you know, her downfall. Because... she always thinks she's got the upper hand, and she really doesn't. I mean, maybe it's the whole, I know they don't really have any connection to Batman in this, but maybe it's the whole Batman envy, you know.
I imagine she lives in Gotham. She's a street level, you know, vigilante. Batman kicked her. Well, no, John Jones kicked her out of the league. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I'm getting it mixed up with the Grant Morrison JLA where Batman kicked her out of the league.
Right, right.
But it's only logical. She's, you know, got some Batman envy. And, you know, they set her up in, I guess, Double Date. Cisco, you know, this is a woman who is, for a superhero, very flawed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Again, the nuance of these characters that I think you see done so well throughout the series.
Right.
You know, she's headstrong. She makes mistakes. She's sloppy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and I'm with you. That's I like it. I like that the characters are so different. You know, that's just – and it comes out through their actions and through their dialogue and – It's really just well thought out. Roulette takes the pins or daggers out of her hair and comes at her, cutting the Huntress, which, you know, it's like, ow, you know. She says,
"Didn't think I was that good, did you? Breaking news, I'm even better."
And she's giving her a good fight. So, yep. You know, Roulette is no... she's no cream puff hiding behind, you know...
See, I think Roulette came up through...
Oh, really?
Yes. I think she was a fighter.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Yeah, I don't know what her... I can't remember what her backstory was in the comics now, But
who was the granddaughter of, like, she was getting revenge on Mr. Terrific or something.
Yeah, she was related.
I didn't read
to
far enough to get that. Sort of, they set it up as like her grandfather set up the thing, and I'll avenge you, grandfather. And then she's like looking at a picture of the original Mr. Terrific, and I didn't get far enough to see the resolution of it.
Yeah, yeah, she was related to him. That's right. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, yeah. Canary has sonar on the ropes, but he manages to stick two pads on her forehead and activate a device that starts scrambling her brains with sound wave, which looks really painful.
Yes.
I mean, woo.
See, when he first did it, I thought he'd clapped her ears.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The sound effect is really good. They're you can almost feel it.
Yeah, it's really well done. And I mean, the way they animate her and the way she reacts just looks very painful. A Huntress gets a hold of Roulette's arm behind her back and makes her admit she's better. She's basically doing the say uncle thing. So.
Yeah.
It's real mature, but I like
it. Again, she's flawed. Like, it's her ego plays into it more than it probably should.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sonar is standing over a writhing Canary and says, in another 30 seconds, your brains will be so scrambled, I'll be able to serve them up with bacon. It's like, yikes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Fun line.
Yeah. But then Huntress throws Roulette into him, and he drops the control, and Huntress is able to smash it with her heel. Lots of technology being stepped on and smashed in this episode. That's a theme in this episode, yeah. Both heroes approach the downed sonar, who says, okay, I give up. They pause, but then Canary punches him, and Huntress points her crossbow at his face and asks,
do I kill the signal or you?
Again, pretty violent for this cartoon, if you think about it.
Thing is they know Huntress ain't playing.
No, I mean, you know, she could, you know, she didn't kill Manigore or whatever his name was, but, I mean, she could have.
Mm-hmm.
She still dropped a giant crate on him, which still could have killed him.
Yeah.
Cut back to the fight with Wonder Woman and Vixen's python hold. Is it working here? Does Diana break Shiera's leg when she's tossing her around by it? It sounded like there's a snap.
I know. I don't know.
Did you guys catch that?
I didn't hear that, no.
Oh, I caught it this time. It was like a sound. So she either sprained it or broke her ankle. Or, I mean, she's walking later, but maybe she could kind of like semi-hover on her wings or something. I don't know. With both of them down, Diana lands, grabs them by their hair, which Vixen doesn't have much hair to grab by, but she still does it. And starts to slam their heads together when the signal ends. Yeah. And what does she say, Cindy?
I hope you two have an explanation for this.
So what do you think about that line, Cindy?
I mean, it's one of those cases they're like, you know, why am I doing this? You know?
What do you think?
I like it because it underlines the fact that she is the almost the den mother of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just like, what happened to me? And it's like, all right, like, you work for me. You look up to me. Explain this.
Yes.
Like, you know, she should be the number one woman in the Justice League because she's Wonder Woman. She's the number one woman in superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I kind of like that line. I like Diana as the den mother, the boss of, well, one of the bosses of everyone. But certainly if you're doing a heroines only kind of thing, she is the number one boss.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to when they were kids, who was bossing them around?
Yeah.
Wonder Woman. You know, she's like, I'm going to tell, you know, just like, you know, so it's like, yeah.
Well, and then if you go with the Gal Gadot, if you go with that, she's the oldest of all of them too.
Well, that's true.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Or Linda Carter. Yeah.
Well, but I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I think now in continuity, wasn't Wonder Woman like Wonder Woman was like Diana active in World War One and Two now again? I can't keep up.
I know. I don't know.
I think she may have been. I don't know.
So the Wonder Woman in the Justice League was also the Wonder Woman in the JSA? Is that what they're doing?
I think maybe now. I'm not sure. But I think that was at least a few weeks ago that was a continuity maybe. Our listeners could tell us. Yeah.
They're going to reboot in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait till next quarter.
Right, right. New number one. Jump to later in the night, and the police are taking Sonar and Roulette away. So do their brains get scrambled when they talk about the Legion? I wonder. Like, they like go catatonic, and are they smart enough to keep their mouths shut?
What? wasn't there a throwaway line in another episode that said that they had captured some of the villains and they're like, they can't talk now? But I know that was when
Because like Gigana did, and like several of them, they all Metallo, obviously, you know, he shorted out, and I just wonder if like they didn't, same thing didn't happen to them.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm gonna dig up a really obscure reference here, but okay. I remember the Secret Society of Supervillains comic from the 70s.
Yep.
Which I reread not so long ago. That series is bonkers.
Yes.
And I remember the cops capture Copperhead, and they say something like, we're trying to get info on the Secret Society, but Grodd blocked all their brains of all info relating to it. So even if he wanted to, he couldn't tell us. Yeah. So basically, like, there's like a mental block on that specific info. Like Adam West saying, you know, Egghead couldn't probe my brain for my Batman identity because I've shoved it to the back of my mind years ago.
Right.
So that works as well as anything. So maybe that, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't have to kill them all, just block that bit of knowledge away.
Yeah. I buy it. Yeah. And we should mention that, you know, later this summer, our pals Paul Keen and Sean M. Myers are going to launch a podcast about the Secret Society of Supervillains.
Oh, they are. That's right. Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah,
that's
so
gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I don't think they have a title for it yet, but it's coming. So that's gonna be a lot of fun because I have not read the whole series, but I've got like that first trade paperback, and it is nuts. Yes,
every issue, everything changes, including the art. It's just so insane. I love it.
Yeah, Fire is leaning on Vixen as they walk out, and Fire says,
"I did what?"
Diana says,
"I know what you mean."
Susan Eisenberg has two lines of dialogue as Wonder Woman in this episode.
Yeah.
Two lines. Hopefully they brought her, she recorded these lines when she was in for something else.
Right.
I hope so. They didn't make her come all the way across town to record two lines.
Hopefully she made more money on the episode than Damon Wayans made on Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Probably not, though. Cheryl walks. Probably not. Yeah, probably not. Hey, guys. Chris in the editing phase here, and just wanted to point out that yes, we keep saying Damon Wayans was cast as Robin in Batman Returns. It was his younger brother Marlon Wayans. I didn't catch that Noah said Damon, and I just went along with it, but it is Marlon, not Damon. Damon was already on like in Living Color and stuff at that point, so but yeah, Marlon Wayans was supposed to be Robin in Batman Returns. Shire walks out with them, leaving Canary and Huntress. Canary offers to talk with the League on her behalf so she can rejoin. She turns it down, saying she does fine on her own. So Huntress never rejoins the League in this series, since this is the last we'll see of her, other than, I guess, in the finale we probably see her.
Right.
Canary calls her Helena and thanks her. She says, "You would have done the same." Then Huntress gets cocky again and tells Canary,
"You know, I was totally whipping your butt when they caught us."
Dinah responds,
"In your dreams."
And she says, "Like I would waste my dreams on you."
So, yeah.
Nice comeback. I love it. She's so, I love, I really love Amy Acker's Huntress because she's just so like, yeah, like I said, she's got just a little bit of that like spoiled rich girl to her or something, you know, yeah. Just like a Clueless kind of vibe about her or something. Not the movie, you know, that kind of thing about her or something. It's just kind of funny. Canary suggests they could settle this here tonight, but after all the mindless brutality they've seen, Huntress says no thanks. But then they get in a philosophical discussion about how everyone thinks superheroes solve all their problems with their fists and that they're muscle-bound stereotypes, and Canary says,
"We're better than that."
And Huntress says,
"Way."
Yeah, see what I mean? I mean, it's like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Canary then suggests two falls out of three, and Huntress says, "You're on." So I guess they are falling into those stereotypes, yes?
Yeah.
Canary takes off her jacket. It's a little posy, but like you said, not like in The Cat and the Canary.
No.
There's not extra animation there. Huntress takes off her utility belt, but she leaves on her cape, which Edna Mode would say,
"No capes, darling."
Yeah, sorry. This could be seen as two women disrobing and getting physical, and it probably kind of is, but, you know, they gotta, you know, they're gonna fight. So they run at each other, and we cut out on a double hi-yah in a flying kick for each of them. So, who do we think won this fight, guys? Noah?
Cindy, I think they beat the tar out of each other for a while, and then they just both gave up.
Oh, okay.
They both gave up, but claimed victory.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha. What, Cindy, you think Canary?
Oh, pfft, Canary.
So overall, what do you think of this one, Noah?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's great. It gets everything you want from this show. Good action, good animation, good characterization. I mean, pretty deep cuts, you know, like as a kid, I loved Justice League Detroit. So seeing Shatterfist from the cadre made me happy, you know. Great design, character design. I mean, Roulette looks fantastic. Black Canary always looks fantastic. Vixen and Hawkgirl look great. It has everything you like from this series. I remember watching this the first time and going, damn, it's over already. You know, wanting more.
Yeah.
Wanting more about Meta Brawl, wanting more about the Glamour Slam, wanting more of Huntress versus Black Canary, although I guess we get sort of three episodes worth of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is everything you love about the show wrapped up in one nice episode.
Yeah. What about you, Cindy?
I loved it. And I mean, I wish we'd seen previous episodes. Who were the previous, you know, fights? Who else have they kidnapped and done this to?
Yeah, I mean, this could have been, I mean, honestly, this could have been a subplot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they didn't really do that this year other than the Secret Society. You know, that was the subplot. But if they could have done this like a Cadmus level subplot. But
yeah.
But you know, it might have been
like different ones showing up, you know, different females showing up and them being
tired,
you know, like tired, and you know what's going on,
beat up a little bit. And
yeah
they could have. Yeah, that's true. It's a lot of fun with some great action pieces and nice character bits, great dialogue. But I, like I said, the plot, you know, you don't want to think about it too much. Like we said, don't want to nitpick it to death, but there's, you definitely kind of feel like this technology was wasted just for Meta Brawl. But it was such a fun episode. I'm going to let that slide. I'm hoping Mr. Terrific and Batman modified the security on the comm links after this, though. Because why wouldn't they just try this again if they didn't, you know?
Yeah. I would assume so, but, you know, you never know.
Right. So let's get into our superlatives.
Power action feature.
So, what did you have for your favorite move or, you know, kapow moment there, your power action feature, Noah?
Oh, for me, it was definitely the leg sweep, the combination of that moment of pause, the look on Vixen and Hawkgirl's face, and then, like, the camera swings over and you see Wonder Woman just, you know, sweeping the leg. It was just great. The music is perfect there. I do want to give honorable mention, though, to when Huntress just crunches Black Canary in the throat, because it felt very vicious and very real, and it was carried through the plot very intelligently.
Very good. I like both those. What about you, Cindy?
Yeah,
I love when Vixen threw Wonder Woman into the sidewall.
Oh yeah, yeah, nice. Yeah, that was.
I noticed, speaking of that move, she was starting to do something. I don't know if either of you ever watched pro wrestling, but she was starting to do this move called a power bomb.
Yeah.
Which is just a really fun move, but then, like, in the middle, she throws her instead of dropping her to the floor.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, are they doing wrestling moves now? How exciting.
This is so many good moments in this one. The tag team action of Vixen holding Shara while Canara removes her comlink was nice, as was the Wonder Woman dog pile, but Huntress beating Roulette and then throwing her into sonar was probably my favorite. And then she breaks the torture device controls. So that was it's like a cool double move, you know. I like that one.
Rotating chairperson.
So for rotating chairperson, who was your standout leaguer here, Noah?
I went with Black Canary. I just feel like, you know, nitpicking is what we do. It can't really be Huntress because she's technically not a leaguer.
Okay.
So Black Canary. But again, I want to give honorable mention to Wonder Woman, because lifting her up as the big bad, the uber heroine, was such a dramatic moment and felt so earned and so like this capstone to the journey we've seen of Wonder Woman since the pilot of the first season of Justice League. So, you know, I liked that she showed up like that. I thought it was a good opportunity taken very, very wisely. So, yeah, honorable mention to Diane.
Okay.
Great. I completely agree, and I subscribe to his newsletter.
Oh, okay, good. Well,
my thoughts are intriguing.
Yeah, that's right. I am going to, even though she's technically not a leaguer, I'm going to give it to the Huntress, because if not for her, some of these characters would be dead and others would be murderers. So I really, even though she, like I said earlier, she is often, you know, she can't cash the check she's writing. She writes so many that she's going to cash a good chunk of them. You know, I mean, that's basically, you know, I mean, so I think this is a great showcase for her. It's our last, of course, this is the last time we see Black Canary, or we hear her, you know, and the Huntress. So, yeah, I'll give it to her.
Justice League Communicator.
For Justice League Communicator, there's some great lines in this one. Noah, what's your favorite?
Well, I like doing the honorable mention thing. You called out my honorable mention, which is that exchange. A Hawk Girl comes to, "I don't think I want to know. We're all in a cage match fighting to the death." Yeah, see? But number one for me, I think this should show up in the comics, calling Black Canary the sultry siren of the Sonic Smackdown. That should be her nickname. If they really should have made a superpowers figure of her. If they did, that would have been the little nickname under her logo on the little info card on the back of the card.
Yes.
I think that should be her nickname, the sultry siren of the Sonic Smackdown. How no one came up with that before, I will never understand.
I love it. I think Ryan Daly should relaunch his podcast and name
yes.
it that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Prepare to see the biggest, baddest, superpowered struggle for dominance that it has ever been my pleasure to present. A no-holds-barred fight between two legendary ladies of the league. Fire! The blistering babe from Brazil. And the sultry siren of the Sonic Smackdown. The undefeated queen of the Glamour Slam, Black Canary!
What about you, Cindy?
I think the whole thing, just because it's funny and it just made me think of you. I mean, you know, you've gotten better over the years, but orange socks.
I'm too literal for my own good. Yeah.
I love you.
So, what are you wearing?
Blue overcoat, fedora.
You really stink at this.
Orange socks?
Well, I've got to give it to the question with his aha! 32 flavors, yeah.
So both of us the questions, but you know. Yeah. You got game, honey.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate it.
It's a very, very, you know, he doesn't get a lot in this episode, but what he does is very impactful, yeah.
Right, right.
I'm telling you, Q, Canary's totally off her game. Think she's moonlighting? Maybe she's stepping out on Green Arrow.
The deeper mystery here is, why do you even care? Isn't this the woman who beat the snot out of you a few months back?
She got a lucky shot in. Okay, 5 or 6 lucky shots. Anyway, that's not the point.
Aha! As I suspected, 32 flavors.
Comic connections.
So, comic connections. Did any, like, comic connections jump out at you in this one, Noah?
I mean, my first thought, but I guess, you know, this was an earlier episode, is just, I was comparing it to, I love that Geoff Johns JSA, so I think Roulette, I think of that first story arc.
Yeah.
Where Meta Brawl is just kind of, you know, it's flabby. She's got these no-name heroes. So she's like, oh, the JSA is back. I'm going to rope them in. But I'm going to go with, you know, she's going into Bloodhaven. And so we got to mention Nightwing. We have to reference Nightwing.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You can't do Bloodhaven without a Nightwing thing. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but Bloodhaven was invented for Nightwing's solo series, right?
He never been mentioned. So.
Yeah, the Chuck Dixon, Scott McDaniel series. Yeah, so. Batman literally sent him there because there was, like, literally bodies that floated down the river into Gotham. So he sent him there to investigate what was going on. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think they likened it to the knight sending a squire to a different land where he can be the knight, you know, basically, or whatever, you know, which, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was, you know, the Nightwing connection, of course, is huge for us here. And of course, this is a sequel to the Cat and the Canary and Double Date. And like you said, Meta Brawl from the comics, and particularly that great Geoff Johns, David Goyer, James Robinson, JSA run. That's just a wonderful. I love that comic. You know, I didn't like it so well after it came back as Justice Society of America, but that run of where it was just called JSA is, like, you know, one of my favorite runs of comics, period. So, yeah. What about you, Cindy? Anything pop out?
I was going to go with the Nightwing cameo as well, so.
Okay. Mm.
Electricity is evil.
So for Electricity is Evil, there's not a lot, but at the same time, like, basically the force field shocks several people, right? Mm. Is there anything I'm missing?
Well, as you can see, those earpieces, which are the cause of all the trouble, when Huntress steps on them, they crackle with electricity. So they are electrically powered
doohickeys.
Doohads that cause evil effects. So there you go.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yeah. So, well, I think that'll wrap this episode up. Noah, thanks so much for helping us cover this episode and for being so very understanding, because my addled mind didn't remember that you'd ask for another episode. So
my mind is addled. Yeah. My mind is addled 9 or 10 hours a day. So don't worry.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. It was a blast. We had a great time talking to you. And also thanks for being a patron of the network.
Of course.
That's
much appreciated.
We can, you know, we all benefit from the fact that Shag can share the pictures of his feet, so thanks. Just kidding. So where can folks connect with you on the interwebs and find out what you're doing?
Well, you can, my business I mentioned before, the Big Quiz Thing, the finest in corporate and private live trivia events nationwide, worldwide, in person, virtual. You can learn all about it at bigquizthing.com. Hire us for your event, etc. I do my own podcast called I Don't Get It, the Pop Culture Get Off My Lawn Cast. My buddy Bill and I, we're both closing in on 50, and we're just trying to keep up with popular culture. So every week we look at something that's new, that's fresh, that's happening, and try to make sense of it. Last week we looked at Glambot, the camera on the red carpets at various award shows that every celebrity is posing for.
Right.
This week we're talking about Waymo, the driverless car taxi service that has come to my city. And I rode one for the first time the other day. It freaked me out.
Oh, my goodness.
In a car, no one in the driver's seat, but the wheel is moving and you're traveling through traffic anyway. The future's arrived and I don't know if I like it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't know when it's coming to Kentucky, so you might have a little time.
I pass Amish on the road every day, so yeah.
Like, for real.
Really, literally. Yeah, so
you have to leave for work at least 5 to 7 minutes before you really want to be there, because more than likely you're going to have to pass at least one buggy, if not more.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Right.
Kentucky, one of the very few states I've never been to, but someday I want to hit them all before my time is done.
Yeah.
And so that's, sorry, you were going to say?
I was going to say stop by and see us.
How far are you from Louisville?
Not too far. We're about 2 hours?
Yeah, about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. We're about an hour from Lexington.
Yeah.
I have an old friend in Louisville. I mean, haven't talked to him in years, but I've heard good things about Louisville, so it's always been on my list of cities to check out someday.
Yeah, see, our daughter's thinking about maybe going to U of L, so.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, awesome. Louisville has a great theater, right? Like a great...
Yes.
Arts district, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's like some famous drama center or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, also there's a rock band. One of my favorite current rock bands is called White Reaper, and they're from Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Anyway, my podcast is called I Don't Get It, the Pop Culture Get Off My Lawn Cast. We're on all the pod catchers, whatever you might call them. And I'm on Instagram as the Noah Tarno, because some kid named Noah Tarno took Noah Tarno before I could. And these days I'm more into Blue Sky, which we're still rooting for.
Right.
So yeah, you can find me there. But bigquizthing.com, that's most of my life.
Nice. Okay. Nice, very nice. Check that out, guys. And we want to give a special thanks to our Patreon supporters like Noah here. For information on how you can support the Firewater Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FWPodcast.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, David Capone, Rocket Dan Johnson, Chuck Carvalho, and Knights Who Say Sledge, who have asked for their name drop on JLUcast. One of you lucky stiffs gets to look after fire while she rests and heals up. Maybe you should fight for it. And we can take bets on that.
There you go. Join us next month as we join Supergirl, Green Lantern, and Green Arrow on a visit to the 31st century with Far From Home. Guess which large superhero team shows up? And guess which hero never returns? Also, guess who our special guest might be? See you then.
Bye.
JLU Cast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLU Cast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLU Cast.
That all you got?
Oh, no. I've saved the very best for last. Ladies and gentlemen, it is on! Can even these four beautiful bruisers stand up to the Amazon powerhouse herself?
Anybody got a plan?
Yeah, try to stay alive.
Anybody got a good plan?